Hi, everybody. Good to see you. So I just stopped by real quick and said hi to our new neighbor. Jacqueline has moved to La Vida as of today. I had to run over to the condo anyway because I'm getting new blinds for my bedroom. And for some reason, the post office had them delivered to the condo that I used to live in. So I had to go over to the condo anyway to pick up my blinds. So I just thought while I was there, I would stop and say hi to Jacqueline. Jacqueline's moving into the same condo that I lived in before. Not the same unit, though. I was on the bottom floor, and she's on the top floor on the opposite end of the building. But I went by and saw her. And Grace, the kitty, was really, really, really happy to see me. I think seeing somebody she knew means the world has not ended. So I told her I'll come back and see her again tomorrow because she knows me pretty well. So she was really, really happy. She was hiding in the closet. Jacqueline said she wouldn't even come out of the closet for her, but she did come out for me. So, and she just looked really happy to see me. So, so that's good. So welcome to Gentle Healing. Before I get started, I like to hear from you guys. And of course, I haven't even been able to get in lately and read your journals. A lot of this has to do now with 2020 planning. You know, planning the retreats, planning the shuttle schedule, of course, writing the Freedom from the Ego retreat, you know, all of that is keeping me pretty busy. But since I'm not getting in and listening and reading your journals, I would love it if you guys had something to share from your journals. And maybe you weren't prepared tonight. Jay will in just a second. Good, Jay. Let me finish what I'm saying, and then I'll turn it over to you. Maybe you weren't prepared tonight, but maybe if you think about that in future weeks, you know, if there's something in particular from your journal you'd like to share, I would love to hear it. And next week in particular, I won't even be here. Shauna is going to facilitate again. I will be on vacation, and you guys know how that works. She definitely wants you to bring things from your journals and everybody share. So this week, pay attention to what you might want to share, and then next week especially. But yeah, I'd like if I can't make it into the forum to read, I love hearing what you guys are writing. So I would love it if you brought your favorite things and shared with me here. And then maybe after the new year, maybe after January, because January is the big tax month. So maybe after I get past this planning and past the tax month, maybe I'll get back into the form again because I really was enjoying it. Jay, I saw your hands that you wanted to share, so why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I'm really grateful that I'm back to discipline with my morning contemplation. It really came after the fall retreat. It was already starting, and it just really amplified it further, so that I have the training and I can fall back on, you know, when life throws me curveballs. I'm finding a lot more simplicity with practice and seeing more clearly that my true nature is that love and that bliss. You know, I'm really believing that. I don't fully know that yet, but I really think that's the truth. More than just an intellectual thought. I mean, it's sunk in, you know, deeper. And I know once you get past 30 days establishing new habits, they tend to root up more. So we're coming up on a month, and I'm noticing a little bit of pushback in myself. Because my continuous awareness practices throughout the day is something a little new for me. But I'm just reminded at how simple it is to just remain and remember that space. And I don't have to do anything to create that because it's already who I am. And so I know that's sounds like such a basic insight, but you know, it's, awakening is more for me. I realize deconstructive, not something I'm building toward. It may seem like that, but it's I've switched that completely to realizing that awakening itself is a letting go process, a retraining process to you know, just like the Course says, let go of the blocks of the awareness of love's presence. I do miss your presence in the forum, Regina. I like your comments. I know you're planning and you're busy and you're doing what you need to do, but I always think of you when I go in the forum to do my contemplation. I'm seeing God as awareness. My term for God is becoming so much more real to me. And I found myself using that term God in the term of awareness, a non-personal God, a God that's in everything and is there. And just touching into moments of peace and happiness and just random times that I normally wouldn't. And it's just kind of cool to stay with myself much more on a continuous basis. It's not fully rooted and established yet, but that whole thing we did where we meditated during a non-meditation time really impacted me. And it just gave me this reminder that literally any time I can practice the games, practice remembering, be in the moment. Especially during activities like folding laundry, I don't really enjoy, but just grateful for the practice and the simplicity of it. So that's it. That's my journey.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. And I'm happy that the retreat was meaningful to you. I'm happy, of course, whenever anybody comes here and the retreats are meaningful. I hope that whenever you come here, you find the retreats meaningful. I hope I never waste your time and your money. I hope it was always worth the trip. Shauna's shaking her head no, but of course she only has to walk a couple blocks to the retreat.
Yeah, I have to walk even less than her. I've got 100 feet. Right?
Yeah. Does anyone else want to share? Okay, Ron.
I kind of feel prompted to share my comments on verse 909. And I'll read it for those who may not have it in front of them. It says, "We have learned to see only those things that seem to be real, but we will not learn to see the truth of the one that sees and knows them. If we do not grasp the reality of the one that perceives and knows, the ghost-like ego will fall away." Excuse me, if we do grasp the reality of the one that perceives and knows, the ghost-like ego will fall away and the deep, intense bliss of the life of grace, the Supreme Self, will come into existence. And this quote really resonated with me. I have to say, not all the quotes this go-round did. And I'll just read kind of what I wrote, what my inner guide was telling me at that time. It said, "Who is the one that sees and knows? The Absolute is the background of all that sees and sees all. The one who knows has three components. On the level of form, for those like me who are on the gradual path, the ego recognizes the truth and that it has no part in the truth or reality and surrenders itself to consciousness. Consciousness has a right mind, wrong mind aspect that is an accurate way, a truer view of interpreting the dream, while I lovingly embrace the unfolding of life in the marketplace. Consciousness then reaches a point that it is crowded out over time by the attention to the pure or absolute truth, this expansion of the divine center. This is a change from consciousness doing the moving to things being moved by the absolute. I suspect there comes a point when there is a period of time consciousness is no longer engaged in moving things, no thought creation at the second principle level of God. This consciousness at rest will then at some point release and be absorbed into the absolute, unfolding a different way of knowing, a being moved instead of moving, and what Bernadette Roberts describes as pure sensory perception. because the mind is no longer folding on itself, which is the only mode, type, or code of reality that the human body has worked with since birth, the body then must make a complete adjustment to this new sensory-only environment. This appears to be quite a shock, a lossless of re-emerging from the womb for the brain to then rewire. After the body adjusts, then what? Maybe there's a shift out of chop wood, carry water, maybe not. I don't know. But sense that one is only in the flow of being in the zone, the flow of being in the zone, where things just miraculously happen without effort. I may still be chopping wood and carrying water, but it will be effortless. It will just be happening. I fully trust that this evolution, or to Jay's point, this deconstruction to living, being truth, true reality will be amazingly wonderful because it is what I really am. No non-alignment or lack of congruence, so I really don't care to speculate on what that is supposed to look like. It will just be what it'll be, and I trust that it'll be wonderful. And you know, there's so many times, particularly with the Eastern Masters, they talk about kind of this lostness or blankness or almost, I don't want to say blackness, but almost nothingness.
Yes.
And I know at one point in time, that's kind of like, well, that doesn't sound so sexy. Why do I want that? That doesn't sound like much fun. But I think again, that is just the trick of where we're at here in the level of form. There's so many other things that point to that. The physicist John Wheeler basically was able to figure out, this is about 20 years ago, that in a vacuum, a 0-point energy of 1 cubic centimeter of empty space, 1 cubic centimeter, has more energy than all the matter of the universe. So all this stuff that we don't see, we don't see 98% of anything, it's just space. There's so much going on there. There's so much more energy there. And that, to me, is what we're... This is what we'll be evolving into or being able to tap into. Do we have any idea what that really is? No. But to me, anyway, I find that exciting.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And yeah, I find it exciting too. I remember when I hit the point that reading words about I'm going to call it the nothing, for lack of better words right now, became extremely exciting to me. You know, reading people like Bernadette Roberts and reading people like Floyd Henderson the final teachings of Nisargadatta Maharaj. And it's, for me, it's nearly impossible to go back and read anything else. So I suppose at some point in our awakening evolution, that just occurs, where we are being called so deeply into what we can't understand that the fact that we can't understand is not a hindrance to our interest, right? You know, but it's not true for everybody yet, you know, and that's good too. Yes, Jay.
One of the games I've been practicing the most of is feeling everything inside of me, other than not only what I look at, but just everything, it's inside of me. Kind of like the game, but a little bit different in the sense that it's not just sight and sound, it's kind of like everything. And as I was going to the La Vida post office this morning, I was just particularly relaxed and at peace. And all of a sudden, I felt this incredible closeness with everyone I saw around me. Like, I almost became embarrassed, like your parents or your sisters, you're like incredibly close, like intimate, you know what I mean? Like, and then just like, whoa. And it just kind of happened. And it wasn't like I was feeling their thoughts, but I kind of was. It was like there was no barrier between me and these people that were around me. And I said good morning, and I did all the activities I normally would do, but I just felt this incredible this closeness, kind of to the things too around me, but it was the people. It was like this, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but it was, I wasn't doing anything, but I wasn't even trying to practice the exercise. It just, I was just in the moment, and this closeness that, you know, was just way more than what I can typically recall in general. So it was kind of neat. Just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Jay. Does anyone else have anything they would like to share? George.
Okay, let's see here. What a reduce my screen here. I've got in 9:13 and 9:14. I'm not going to read those, but I will read my contemplation. I seem to be at a slump as I'm not feeling a sense of clarity lately. And so from inner wisdom, nothing will make sense until you make a transition beyond your current thoughts of not knowing what is. The sages are telling you there is another step, and until you make that step, simply ponder, looking within, and trust that the desire to know the truth will provide the clarity you seek. So, I seem to go through cycles that sometimes I read these quotes and it just jumps out at me. But other times it's like I seem to struggle.
Well, I think that what Inner Wisdom said to you was absolutely perfect. So thank you for sharing that. And I'm guessing you're not the only one who struggles sometimes. Yeah. Anyone else want to share? Susan.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I love those slumps when I go through them. I really engage in the slumps because I realize that there's some sort of emptiness, some sort of voiding in me that's perhaps waiting. I don't know. It's that sense of unknowing where I am and that instability that you know, I have nothing. I have nothing to say. And I work on that sometimes and I realize that I'm working too hard and I have to back off. And I think that's where that poignant sense of, wait a minute, what am I doing? And what am I disallowing by trying to do too much? That's been my experience with those slumps in trying to contemplate. And it helps. It helps to go through them sometimes.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah, thank you. That was beautiful as well. Yeah, making sure we're not doing too much. It seems like once upon a time, although I don't have a real clear memory of it, it seems like once upon a time I received some guidance that told me I needed to be okay with not understanding. Because the mind wants to understand because then it has a sense of control. And so sometimes the mind understands, sometimes the mind doesn't. But if I can be at peace and okay with either, then I'm actually learning how to abide as the self, whether there's intellectual understanding or not. Anything else? All right, then, let's look and see. Let's look and see what I have written down here. I guess the first thing that I have is 898. Having trouble finding 898. It's like it disappeared out of my book. Oh, there it is. I kept going in front of it, behind it. All right, here we go. The sage enjoys as his own being the bliss of all transcendent being. The error lies in these ignorant folk seeing him as a body that suffers. The sage enjoys as his own being the bliss of all transcendent being. The error lies in these ignorant folk seeing him as a body that suffers. I think the reason I wanted to bring that up is because I remember one of the questions at the Satsang and Sangha retreat. Somebody asked a question, I don't remember the exact question, but it was something like, you know, but Ramana Maharshi still got cancer, you know, something like that, you know. So, you know, I think there can often be confusion. Like, I think that, you know, when we talk about the unaffected self and we talk about realizing the unaffected self, I think some people get the idea that the unaffected self somehow is the enlightened person's body. You know, so if I'm enlightened, I should never get cancer. In fact, I remember one person said to me once, Peace Pilgrim couldn't have been enlightened because she was killed in a car wreck. That's like saying Jesus couldn't have been enlightened because he was crucified. You know, so I think it's important to realize that the body is a part of the story. And what we're doing is we're waking up to the fact that we aren't the character. I don't know if I told you guys this experience or not. I know I've told it a few times, but I think it was around December of 2006. I had this experience of, I don't know what else to call it. I'll call it waking up. And in this awakeness, I didn't have any identification at all in the moment. So now if I was to look back and try and describe it, the way I would describe it is I was just eyes. Literally, if you had walked up to me during this time and asked me who I was, I would have answered, I'm nobody. And I would have meant it completely. And there was almost no thought. But there were thoughts that came in, and I'm going to say they came in from the right mind, as guidance, as instructions. There would be thoughts telling me what to do, like go to the computer, you know, and I would go to the computer. I was told to look up this person named Regina Don Acres on the internet. And I looked up Regina Don Acres, and I was told to read her bio. And I started reading her bio. And as I started reading her bio, it was the funniest thing in the world because it's almost like 1,000 miles, you know, back into this tiny, tiny aspect of the brain, you know, both 1,000 miles back and 1,000 years back, barely remembered. There was like this little tiny memory that I used to think I was her. And I thought it was the funniest thing in the world because it was so clear to me that she was just a character. And how could I think that I was her, this character? Now that awakening didn't last. What I ended up doing in that awakening was I received guidance. And I suppose I'm living that guidance now. And when I received the guidance, I'll just tell you what the guidance was. I'm a little shy about this. This is something I don't talk about very much. The guidance was in the same language as the guidance that Jesus gave to Peter. The guidance was, take care of my sheep. And I suppose in some way I'm fulfilling that guidance now. But once I received the guidance, then I came back into this, you know. But what's always stuck with me from that experience was, you know, how I couldn't even imagine that I had once thought I was Regina Don Acres. Like, that was just the silliest thing in the world. And you see, that's what we're all doing. We're all thinking that we're these people and that we're these bodies. And it's not true. And in fact, it's the silliest thing in the world. And so when an enlightened master wakes up, I mean, you know, when I received the guidance to walk over to the computer, it was this body that walked over. When I received the guidance to, you know, look up Regina Don Acres on the internet, and at this point I didn't know who she was. I didn't remember that I had once that I was her until I started reading her story. That's when that memory came. But when I started looking up this person on the internet, it was these fingers that were typing. So it's kind of a hard thing to talk about. You know, how is it that somehow you're still living and breathing and moving in this body, and yet you have no identification with it? Zero. Right? But somehow that's the case. And so, you know, Ramana Maharshi can get cancer, or the body can get cancer. You know, Jesus can be crucified. And it has no effect to them because they are not at all identified with the character. So enlightenment isn't about making this perfect. It's about genuinely shifting to a non-identification as who I am and having absolute certainty that I'm not this. So I'll just read that quote again. The sage enjoys as his own being the bliss of all transcendent being. That's what I described as just eyes. The sage enjoys as his own being the bliss of all transcendent being. The error lies in these ignorant folk seeing him as a body that suffers. So hopefully that brings some clarity to that idea, that the body is supposed to somehow become perfect. Are there any comments or questions? Oh, wait, let me read one more thing before I do that. I also, when I was contemplating this, I was reminded of Jesus. Jesus said, "These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." I mean, I think that's saying the same thing, right? Like, sure, the body's still here. Sure, I'm still somehow walking and talking through this body. But there's no iota of identification with the body. "These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Okay, so who would like to share on 898? Okay, George.
You know, it what occurs to me, and in the reading of other texts, the Bible in particular, you know, the Bible talks about a lot of people in different aspects, and the tendency is to think those people are outside, that they're someone else. These ignorant folk are really us until we get to that point of awakening. We may feel like we have some knowledge, but until we actually make that transition, we're reading about ourselves.
Yeah, thank you very much. Very humbling. Yes, Jay. Okay, maybe not, Jay. All right, there you go.
Can you hear me? Only through the willingness do I open to have the capacity to see the truth. As the ACIM would say, see the face of Christ in your brother. And that, like I was commenting with this sort of ordinary awareness that I'm seeming to have more and more, the life we live is inside. And what we judge is always outside. And, you know, me as the foolish one, if I judge, I'm being silly folk or whatever the term was, is just being in mind. That's it. You're in mind. You're being your silly folk.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's see what I had taken notes on next. 899. I think that Ron talked about this. Although he maybe didn't point at this exact quote. To me, this is what Ron was talking about. So let's look at 899. "The sage abiding in self being, asleep and yet awake, immersed in the still, deep, immutable ocean of bliss supreme, will never lapse back into this ruinous world and suffer." So Ron was saying he didn't want to use the word dark, but dark, you know, talking you know, trying to talk about this awakening that's beyond consciousness, right, Ron? Isn't that what you were trying to point to? And, you know, Ramana Maharshi describes it sometimes as sleepwalking. And in fact, one example that he gives is like the babe that is suckling on the mother's breast while asleep. You know, the babe is completely asleep, and yet it's still, you know, doing what it's doing, suckling on the mother's breast and feeding the body. And he says that's what it's like for the sage. So asleep and yet awake. I mean, they're trying to describe this experience of the absolute, of awakening beyond consciousness, which, of course, Bernadette Roberts talks a lot about. We're very lucky to know about her. Asleep and yet awake, immersed in the still, deep, immutable ocean of bliss supreme. You know, this is what the consciousness cannot understand. You know, consciousness cannot imagine beyond consciousness. We can't imagine not being conscious. We can imagine a freer consciousness. We can imagine a consciousness that is not plagued by the ego. We can probably imagine the state that I was talking about, just eyes. But that was still a conscious state. We can't imagine beyond consciousness entirely. And yet again, you know, it's so clear that this is exactly what the teachers are pointing to, or at least some of the teachers, right? The great masters. One thing that's been interesting to me for some time is, it used to be confusing to me, it's not anymore. But you'll listen to some teachers who'll say, you know, thousands of people are waking up. You know, you watch Buddha at the gas pump, and he's got hundreds of people that he's interviewed, right? And then you get somebody like Michael Langford that says it's so rare. And in fact, if I'm remembering correctly, Michael said something like there's like 8 awake people on the planet right now. Well, which is it, thousands or 8? I mean, I know there's a difference, right? And I think the difference is in the level, right? There may be thousands of people, maybe even tens of thousands, who knows, who have awakened to consciousness, awakened beyond the ego. But then there may be 8 or 14 or who knows that have awakened to the absolute. And those are the true masters. Right? And again, I think we're very, very lucky to be contemplating their work, even though we cannot begin to imagine what they mean by things like asleep and yet awake, immersed in the still, deep, immutable ocean of the bliss supreme. Does anyone want to share on that? Yes, Susan.
Okay. I get confused in contemplation sometimes, often now, more often, trying to contemplate something that I'm aware that I'm not consciously able to grasp.
Right.
And I feel very limited when I'm in that state, as if I'm nearly to the edge, but I can't quite get there. I don't allow myself to get frustrated because I feel it coming on. I feel some anxiety coming on, and I deliberately back away now. But it's very difficult knowing that I'm not in that conscious. I'm in a conscious state, incapable of going further. And I wonder if you could speak to that at all.
Well, first of all, I would let go of the idea that you're incapable of going further. That may be the current experience, but I wouldn't hold on to that idea. Because what has happened to me, you know, like a dozen times, and a lot of that time was while contemplating the 7 steps, was somehow I did, you know, I don't know how to say this, but I did touch it. I did have what I would call a distinct knowing of it and an absolute knowing that it was the absolute truth. You know, and that came through contemplating the seven steps. Now, it doesn't stay. But, you know, this is how I came up with the four principles of God. I didn't ever, to my knowledge, read that in a book until after I realized it myself by contemplating the seven steps. Then, it was only then that I say, oh, that's what Ramana's talking about. Oh, that's what Nisargadatta, oh, that's what, you know. But I didn't read it from Bernadette Roberts or somebody and then turn around and teach it to you guys. I was contemplating the seven steps somewhere, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 I saw it. I knew it. And when I knew it was the truth. And this is what I was saying, you know, when I was teaching Nisargadatta last Wednesday night. This truth is not the truth that we want when we start this path. And this is what Liz Cronkite was saying when I was reading her to you on Sunday night. I don't think any of us started this path in search of this truth. We were in search of a truth of our imagination. Right? But what happens at some point, and it's happened for me, and if it hasn't happened for you yet, I'm certain that it will, at some point, it becomes ridiculous to want a truth of our own imagination. At some point, it only makes sense to want what's true. And if this is the truth, whether it's what my ego wanted or not, it's the truth. And for that reason only, I want to immerse myself in it. I want to embrace it fully. I want to know it inside and out, just because it is the truth. And the interesting thing about the truth, you know, when I grasp it, is it's very clear to me that it's beyond consciousness. And it's also very clear to me that it's eternal. And that anything and everything in consciousness is temporary. Yes, Susan. Oh, actually, I think Jay was... Oh, go ahead, Susan, then we'll get to Jay. Go ahead. I'm kind of talking to you, so...
I appreciate that, all of it. So I hear you saying there are times when I'm grasping truth. And in those moments, similar to Jay's moment in the Levita post office, when all of a sudden his body and his mind were not really identified as Jay McCormick, but somewhere beyond that, and that he was touching into the lives and the empath of other people. Is that an example of what you're talking about, where for those glimpses and those practices that we practice, those awareness games that we practice, and then all of a sudden those are incorporated and we're embodying some of that without our doing?
Yeah, no, what Jay was talking about was still within consciousness. That was a wonderful shift within consciousness, right? Otherwise, he could not have even talked about it like he did. But what I am saying, yes, is as we continue to contemplate these things, as our desire lies there, these experiences come upon us miraculously. Whether they're experiences of higher levels of consciousness or whether they're the non-experience of knowing the truth, knowing it, you know, with every fiber of our being, even if only temporarily. And that comes about just by sincere, I mean, let me ask, are you ready for this? Like, what good would it be, Susan, to only contemplate stuff you already understood? Where the heck is that going to take you? You know, it's contemplating this stuff that we don't understand that takes us there. So hopefully that will help you just to, yeah. And then Jay, I think you had your hand up as well.
Yeah, for $8.99, I contemplated what came to me. Hey,
if something makes noise out of your mic, we can't hear your voice at all. We just hear the scratching noise.
What about now?
Yeah, it's every bad. Time you speak.
I'll exit and come back in.
Okay. That time we didn't hear it, but yeah, and I wonder what it was. I can't imagine what it would have been. Usually it's like papers or something, but I didn't see him with any papers, so I don't know what that was. Any other comments about talking about what we can't talk about? Ron, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, I was going to say there's I don't know if, how many of you have seen the movie Shakespeare in Love. In that movie, back during the time when Shakespeare was around, theater was not okay. I mean, it was banned. And so getting a troop of people to be able to actually perform and put it together was kind of difficult for a variety of different reasons. And they had this one character who was kind of the person who was the producer. The several different times they had to play, every single time it would come up, it was like there was no possible way. Someone, you know, this actor was sick, this person was falling down, this, you know, all the key people were having all kinds of issues, and they look at me and go, so what's going to happen? He says, I don't know. He says, but it'll all work out. I don't know. He says, I have no clue, but somehow it all just works out. You know, it's the great mystery. And I think particularly for someone like myself who tends to be more in on the head side of things, the intellectual side of things, it's actually an amazing freedom just to embrace the fact that it's a mystery that I'll never understand. And as soon as I can understand it, I'll never be able to understand it intellectually or to be able to communicate it to anybody. If I do, then it's not the truth. And you know, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, the Tao that is told is not the Tao, right? Yeah, thank you. And Jay?
Yeah, I thought that the truth that can be spoken is not.
No, nope, it's still not working. There's something wrong with your mic. We can't even make out your words.
I'm supposed to shut up then.
Okay. All right. All right. Then tell you what, let's move on since we can't hear Jay. I'd be curious to know why his mic is making that noise. I have here to look at the RDA Journal 899A. So let me share my screen and we'll go do that. I don't have any memory now of what that was, but apparently I thought it was worth sharing. 899A, awake beyond perception, knows truth beyond perception. Beyond perception means not a part of perception. Not a part of perception is not affected by perception. Just as I am not affected by what is happening in Tajikistan today. I am not affected by what is happening in Tajikistan today because I am completely unaware of Tajikistan. Awake beyond perception is completely unaware of perception, just as I am completely unaware of Tajikistan. What happens in the world doesn't touch that which is awake beyond perception. Take heart and be of good cheer. So again, this is why the great masters are not affected by anything that occurs in perception, because they are beyond perception. What they are aware of is beyond perception entirely. Of course, the miracles refers to that as heaven. Right, it refers to awake within consciousness as the real world, right? There's the ego, and then you wake up to the real world. Within from the real world, you reach this point where you are escorted. God takes the last step. You are escorted beyond, that's good. I'll go out of camera range. Beyond perception entirely, right? Beyond perception entirely. And that, again, is what the masters are talking about in these particular quotes. So let me see what I had next. We don't have a lot of time, but we still have some. So I have just 901. So let's have a peek at 901. Through inner renunciation, free of all desires except for the lofty desire for the flood of divine grace, purity arose within my soul. And as my mind, becoming perfectly pure, conducted its inquiry, the greater life of grace that nothing can mar, the reality of the self manifested within my heart. And this actually goes very well with the discussion I was having with Susan a moment ago. What really stands out to me in this particular quote, again, through inner renunciation, free of all desires except for the lofty desire for the flood of divine grace. The lofty desire for the flood of divine grace. You know, what's interesting about those words is that's not the lofty desire of intellectual understanding. Right? So we contemplate these quotes. We don't know what they mean. As George pointed out, we are the ignorant ones, right? We don't know what they mean, and that's why we contemplate them. We contemplate them with this lofty desire for divine grace to come and touch us. You know, we're putting ourselves beyond our intellectual boundaries so that grace can reach out and touch us. We're going outside of our safety zone, outside of where we feel secure, I know, right? So yeah, that's all I wanted to share about that. I just love that line, through inner renunciation, free of all desires except for the lofty desire for the flood of divine grace. And then he's describing it happened to him. Purity arose within my soul. Notice he's not saying, I conquered, I understood, I finally got it. He's saying, purity arose within my soul, and as my mind, becoming perfectly pure, conducted its inquiry, the greater life of grace that nothing can mar, the reality of the self manifested within my heart. And they're like, this just happened to me. But he was putting himself in the way. You know, like if you think of grace as a great big machine that comes and sucks you up, you know, he was putting himself in the way of that machine. So when the machine came along, hopefully he would get sucked up by it too. And that's what we do by contemplating these quotes, by sitting in meditation. We're putting ourselves in the way of that machine. We're making ourselves available to be sucked up by grace. The divine grace vacuum, yes. Any comments on that quote? Then let's see. Let's look at 909. We have learned to see only those things that seem to be real. Yeah, I thought this was the quote you did, right, Ron? We have learned to see only those things that seem to be real, but will not learn to see the truth of the one that sees and knows them. If we do grasp the reality of the one that perceives and knows, the ghost-like ego will fall away, and the deep, intense bliss of the life of grace, the Supreme Self, will come into existence. So let me share my screen, because I have that we are to look at the RDA journal. First comes discrimination, true discrimination, disregarding the mind and recognizing the truth. This in itself is an achievement. And this in itself is an achievement. You know, most people go around believing their thoughts and perceptions and emotions. Those are the three things they believe: their thoughts, their perceptions, and their emotions. all of which are temporary passing phenomena and have nothing to do with the reality of who you are or what is true. Yet even though they are passing temporary phenomena and have nothing to do, nothing, you hear that? Nothing to do with who you are or what is true, most people spend all of their time believing that. We even have a saying, seeing is believing, right? So most people believe their thoughts, their perceptions, and their emotions. So first thing that comes for most of us is discriminating between the true and the untrue, and learning to see the untrue as meaningless. So learning when this thought of grand frustration shows up in my mind, because there's my partner doing that again, right? Learning to disregard that thought, you know, and the emotions that are attached with it. Learning to disregard them, not repress them. Disregard them. Allow them to appear without taking them seriously, without giving them the meaning of reality, without giving them the meaning of me. Right? Not repressing them. They're allowed. In fact, repressing them, when you repress something, that's because you do think it's real and you think you're bad for thinking it or bad for feeling it, right? When you can allow something to be without living from it, without speaking it, without acting from it, but still allow it to be there, that's when you're making it meaningless. It's not meaningful enough to move you. So that's what comes first. First comes discrimination, true discrimination, disregarding the mind, recognizing the true, and this in itself is an achievement. But then, what knows this achievement? What sees correct discrimination? What recognizes it? Right? This is that next level. What witnesses my awakening? Let's move on to 909E. I have a question and I need wisdom to give me the answer true. Inquiry is a mental activity. Stillness is hushed, non-moving, looking. What is the best way for me to proceed with meditation in order to transcend the ego and the building blocks that are beyond it? In order to, sorry, I'm having trouble speaking. Let me start that over. What is the best way for me to proceed with meditation in order to transcend the ego and the building blocks that are beyond it, in order to dive deep into the truth and smother all falsehood so that only the truth remains? What is the best way for me to proceed? And these are the instructions that I received. Close the eyes. Settle down. When settling is accomplished, notice. And that could be noticing anything. That could be noticing the sensations in the body. That could be noticing the sounds in the environment, right? But then notice what is noticing. This will follow its own path. As each step is taken, something new will be noticed. Abide there still, and then notice what is noticing. Follow the path back until nothing can be noticed that is not also the noticer. So as we progress with meditation, go deeper and deeper and deeper. You could say it's almost like we're passing through different realms of consciousness. And as we pass through different realms of consciousness, they will appear different than our, you know, everyday waking world. And what these instructions are saying is that what happens for a lot of people is when they pass through these different realms of consciousness, some of the realms of consciousness seem spiritually profound, seem very, very deep. And what can happen then is outward attention goes into that. And this is saying, no matter what you pass through as you meditate, your job is to keep noticing the noticer. No matter what you pass through as you meditate, you always have one goal. So don't get tripped up by the different depths of consciousness that you may pass through. And in fact, again, the last line of this said, follow the path back until nothing can be noticed that is not also the noticer. Just awareness aware of itself and nothing else. All right, Jay, I think I saw your hand. We'll see if you can hear you.
How about now?
Right now I hear you.
Is that in your opinion because the mind has been so let go of and you don't want anything else in the world that the mind, that's all it's got left, try to draw you into thinking these mystical experiences, or are they actually mystical experiences that you're going through as you go through these levels of mind or whatever? Like, I was never clear on that.
Hold on. I got to get a drink really fast before I answer you. What's happening is all of that is still levels of consciousness, and you are attempting to go beyond consciousness. So you can't get stopped, or you know, you could use the word levels of mind, because sometimes people use the word mind and consciousness, as the same. But you can't get caught up in any of the levels of consciousness and still go beyond consciousness. So, you know, that like the meditation that we do with Bentinho, that we did at the Satsang and Sangha retreat, the way he words it is, anything that you experience, he calls it, throw it in the trash. But what he means is, when he says throw it in the trash, he means realize that's just consciousness and you're here to go beyond consciousness. He said, and he starts off, I can't remember exactly what he lists, but he says, you know, I don't care if it's the thought, oh, I haven't filed my taxes yet. Or if you're traveling through faraway universes, having the experience of traveling away through, you know, these faraway universes, he says, throw it away. See, it's just consciousness. You know, he puts those two things equal, right? Traveling through universes and thinking, oh, shoot, I forgot to file my taxes.
So he's saying that's still part of the dream that lasts 10 billion years upon awakening. After the 10 billion years, you realize the 10 billion years never happened. That's part of that, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what these instructions are saying too. You know, if you can perceive it, I don't care what it is, it's not you. And you're after you. Any other comments on that one? We're about out of time anyway, it looks like. So again, I will not be here next week because I will be traveling for Thanksgiving. Do you guys want to see my fingernails? Are you real interested in my fingernails? Yes, good, good, good. I just got them done today, and can you see? She put a little bit of turkey on it. Isn't that cute? So a turkey on my fingernails for Thanksgiving. So I won't be here next week. I'm going to see my dad. I'm going to leave my mom here in La Vida, and I'm going to see my dad. But she does have her sister-in-law coming and staying with her. So Shauna will lead next week. So please come prepared to share, because that's what Shauna likes. It makes it a lot easier on her. Yeah. All right, you guys, thank you again for hanging out with me, and I will see you later. Bye.